Coming up on this week's book show, one of the best-loved fiction writers of her generation, Zsumpa Lahiri, fell completely in love with Italian language and literature beginning in 2012. She recently edited and published the Penguin Book of Italian Short Stories, a collection of short works of fiction, nearly half appearing in English for the first time. Zsumpa Lahiri, on this week's book show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. One of the best-loved fiction writers of her generation, renowned for her novels of East Indian American immigrant experiences, Zsumpa Lahiri fell completely in love with Italian language and literature beginning in 2012. She now reads exclusively in Italian and spends half the year in Italy. She describes her current creative practice in teaching as an effort to transmit the awe of Italian authors and their work. She recently edited and published The Penguin Book of Italian Short Stories, a collection of short works of fiction nearly half appearing in English for the first time. Zsumpa Lahiri's best-selling collection, Interpreter of Maladies, won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction and was followed up by her first novel, The Namesake. Again, the new book is The Penguin Book of Italian Short Stories. It's a pleasure to welcome Zsumpa Lahiri to this week's book show. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
So let us begin with the idea of the trip and going to Rome and ultimately what you were expecting versus what actually happened.
Well, I was hoping to, first of all, have the experience of living somewhere else. I was raised in Rhode Island. I had lived in the United States my entire life until then, with frequent travels to Calcutta throughout my childhood to visit my relatives, my parents' world. I had been here and there, but I had never lived anywhere else, and I wanted to know what that was like. I felt that it was important to do that, maybe because I'm the child of immigrants whose entire life was informed by a shift, you know, a geographical shift. So I wanted to go for that larger purpose. I wanted to show my children, who were only 7 and 10 at the time, expose them to another part of the world, something different, something unfamiliar. And my final purpose was to be able to really know and speak Italian, a language I had been studying for many, many years in the United States, diligently, also somewhat sporadically. I realize that's a contradiction, but I had all the best intentions, but you know, life sometimes got in the way, and I had studied it enough to function and to be able to have conversations and things like that. But I knew that there was a big piece missing in my language acquisition, and that piece involved living somewhere in Italy.
So when you decide to do that and you are living in Italy, what is it about it that you realize that you have, A, made the right decision and that this really takes you over?
Well, I mean, I should back up by saying we thought, you know, what I proposed to my family was 1 year abroad, a sort of time out, parenthesis, sabbatical, as it were. And that was the idea. The idea was to spend a year away and to come back and to resume life as it once, as we had been living it in New York and so forth. But soon after we arrived, it was clear to me that 1 year would not be enough. I asked for a second and then a third. And I feel that in some sense, that experience is still unfolding, even though physically I did return to the United States and I do live here and there now. So it's been 8 years of really a life-altering journey and experience that is ongoing.
In moving to Rome, you say that just a week after moving there, you started to write in your diary in Italian. Was that a major switch for you? I mean, is that something that starts you down a path?
It did, but I didn't know what was happening. I mean, I think so much of what happens in the space of a diary is not on a conscious level, right? Because one feels, at least I feel, when I'm writing in that space, protected and alone, and it's a form of communication with myself, trying to figure things out, and so forth, and so it's in that space that suddenly one day the observations I was jotting down about our first week in Rome switched over into another language, and that has not stopped, right? So now I have 8 years worth of Italian diaries, and out of that diary grows increasing confidence, familiarity, curiosity to take my Italian writing outside of that safe sphere and to try to actually express myself more publicly, as it were, you know, say in a short story or in an article or what have you, something perhaps to publish, or even before that, something to just write and type out and share with somebody. So it really was a rebirth for me as a writer. It's been a second act, you know, because my English writing grew in the same way. I used to keep a diary. I still do keep a diary, the aforementioned diary. And my English writing was also slow to emerge and found its bearings in that diary writing mode. So it was all very familiar to me in a way. It felt, you know, I recognized something. I thought, I know this experience. I know, I recognize, I remember these steps.
Your very first book won a Pulitzer Prize for Interpreter of Maladies. That was in 1999. Then Namesake, they turned that into a movie. You write Unaccustomed Earth and The Lowland. Looking back on it now, how satisfied are you and were you with that work?
Well, I'm never completely satisfied with anything. And I think that's normal. I think that's good. I think that's what pushes me to the next project. Each book is a stepping stone on a journey. I don't know where exactly it's going, but I know that it's going somewhere. I feel that it's going somewhere. So, you know, I wouldn't have written Namesake if I hadn't written Interpreter of Maladies. I wouldn't have written Unaccustomed Earth without having written the Namesake and so on. So there's a sense of, you know, the satisfaction comes really from the act of completion, and knowing that I arrived at a certain end point and that end point will ideally become a new point of departure. That's how I've always approached my work, moving through, you know, going from project to project.
Once you realize what you're doing and you are living in Italy, do you think of it as a reset?
Yes, in some sense, yes. As I was saying, you know, I mean, I really learned how to, I mean, from the ground up, I learned a new language. I learned how to live in a new language, to express myself in a day-to-day way and also slowly in a creative way. And it became a new instrument for me. It has become a new instrument for me as an artist, as a writer. And I felt that, and I think that's always good to go back and to learn and to relearn, reevaluate what you're doing, you know, in my case, writing. So the new language gives me a way to really think about what I need to write about, what are the stories I need to tell that I have yet to tell, how will I tell them? So in that sense, absolutely, it was a reset. It was a new beginning. Mm.
You find freedom in that, in working in this, in the Italian language, but it is a language that you are familiar with, but certainly less familiar with. Is that a contradiction?
Well, I think that's the game, right? Because right. It's that hunger to know it and to know it every day a little bit better. That pushes me and that challenges me. And I mean, there's a lot to be said for limits and the liberty and the strength, you know, the contradiction of the liberty and the constriction, the constraints of having only so much to work with, having only so many ingredients, as it were, right? So it's a different kind of approach. It's a different kind of preparation, but I think that, you know, it's an incredible challenge for me, and it's opened up my way of reading and thinking and writing in so many ways, and I feel that now things are coming together in ways that are so satisfying, so evocative, so meaningful to me. You know, people often ask, oh, well, you've rejected English and you've gone to this other language. And from my perspective, it's the opposite that's happened, right? It's opened up my world, and it's enlarged my perspective, and it's enabled me to make deeper and greater connections for the whole journey that I'm making, backward and forward. You know, the ability to look back and make these new connections, that's very powerful for me.
The name of the new book is The Penguin Book of Italian Short Stories, edited by Giunta Lahiri. Not only did you edit this collection, but you translated many of the stories in this collection, many of the stories translated for the first time into English. It seems, in just what you were talking about, of just being the opposite of rejecting English, that this project, this particular project, is a way to bring that work to an English audience.
Absolutely, you know, and it's motivated by another relatively new piece of my identity, which is that of a college professor. I now teach at Princeton University, and I teach writing courses and translation courses, and the whole anthology, this Penguin Book of Short Stories, really grew out of my desire, my hope, my excitement for Italian writers that I, you know, I'd been reading. I was sort of in their spell, and I wanted, in the classroom, I wanted to share that with my students. I wanted to say, you know, look, there's all this amazing stuff over here. Look over here. Look at this language. Look at this tradition. Look at these short story writers. Look how they worked. Look at how they were, you know, what their influences were and how they might influence us. And so the book really grew out of that impulse the initial sort of making do with photocopies and hunting around in the library for decent translations of Italian short story writers, and then formalizing that into a book and commissioning translations and thinking about, you know, a shape for the book and a vision, a curatorial vision for the book.
I'm curious, in that translation, you used the word decent a moment ago. I think we're probably all familiar with the term lost in translation. Mm-hmm. What does that mean for you as to your responsibility as a translator? And I would even think of understanding what it has been like for you to see your work translated.
Well, the purpose of the translation is to reach the reader, right? And not only to reach the reader, but to convince the reader, to enrapture the reader, to draw the reader into to the work, to enable the reader to keep reading the work, right? And so translations, as everybody knows, are dated. They feel dated because language is a moving target and language changes. So the English language of the 1920s is not the same as the English language of 2020, right? So maybe a short story translated in 1950 doesn't reach my students in the same way with the same energy that the original actually contains, right? The translator is writing in his or her moment, in his or her time, right? So the purpose of the translation, if I translate something today, it means I want the reader today in 2020 to engage with that translation, right? And so that's the point. That's the point. And that's what has to be evaluated in translations. And what is amazing is that, you know, I mean, the original work remains. It doesn't move forward in time. It doesn't have a second chance. and that's both an amazing thing and in some sense, you know, it's its own limitation, right? So we have the Divine Comedy by Dante, and then we have so many translations over across the centuries, right, that have reached different generations of readers. It will continue, we hope, to be translated as we move forward in time. So that had, all of this has to be considered very carefully. And so for the anthology, for example, I did recommission some translations of stories that had already been translated, but for whatever reason, I felt that they deserved a fresh translation.
But you always want to be true to the original work, correct? I mean, you want to represent that work in the way it was intended. I certainly understand the language being a moving target, but you want to be true to it.
Yes, but language isn't, you know, translation, the languages don't correspond to each other neatly. So a story written in Italian can sound as if it were written yesterday, even if it were written in 1925, because that language is so precise and still resonant, right? But the translation does not necessarily endure in the same way. That's the problem, right? So it's not changing the meaning of the work. It's working with the language and the way people talk, for example. You know, the way we are talking right now is not the way we may have been speaking 100 years ago. I mean, almost surely, right? Less contractions, things like that. Certain words that just don't, you know, that weren't there, certain expressions that lose their significance over time. So this is what I'm talking about. This is why Kafka, you know, this is why the metamorphosis of Kafka, even in, you know, a relatively short span of time, can be translated by 10 different translators, you know, because the text is so complex and so nuanced, and there are so many ways to interpret almost every word in that story. And if you read in translation, just the other day we were talking about this in class, you know, that especially with literature, with poetry, with literary texts that are so inherently complex, often it's reading in translation and reading in different translations that we can tease out the meaning of the original. This is an amazing thing. This is an amazing side value of translation.
It is an amazing thing. The new collection is the Penguin Book of Italian Short Stories. It is edited by Jean-Paul Lahiri. So what brought you to these particular 40 writers and the stories, as you say, you felt could connect with an audience, obviously, but also would benefit from a translation, a new translation?
Well, so the book sort of began as my own desert island list, right, of authors I had been discovering in Italian, falling in love with, stories I'd been falling in love with that were starting to really work their way into my bloodstream and ways of writing that were revelatory to me. So initially it had a very personal you know, it was very personally motivated, right? And then, you know, in teaching and in working with my students and sort of living the moment and talking to other Italian writer friends, you know, just sort of widening the net and wondering, well, who do I really? And once the book was proposed to me as a project, I should back up by saying, because I already had an idea of putting a book together like this on my own and proposing it to an editor, and then the editor proposed this project, you know, to me. So it was lovely and serendipitous, and. But I thought about, you know, I thought about focusing on something that does really strike me about Italian literature and Italian writing in the 20th century in particular, and that is its incredibly hybrid nature. And by that I mean stories that are full of complexity and contradiction. Have almost a double nature, stories that grow out of writers who come often from other language backgrounds, come either from dialect or from, you know, a writer like Italo Svevo, for whom Italian is a sort of, it's a learned language, right? As is the case for many of the writers in my collection. That really spoke to me. Because in some sense, of course, it echoes my own experiences as a writer, both in English and in Italian, right? I learned English, and then I learned Italian. And it was neither of those languages are the languages that I was raised by, that I speak to, you know, with which I could communicate with my mother and father. So there's always a gulf, there's always a divide. Mm-hmm. And I found that in these in the anthology, I kept discovering examples of writers who were on the edge in that sense, linguistically, culturally, geographically. You know, writers who were born outside of Italy, writers whose identity was in flux. That's probably the essence of what I'm trying to say. And this fluctuating identity creates these incredibly rich hybrid narratives. So I wanted to focus on that, and I wanted to highlight that in the collection.
How deeply have you thought about the impact of this immersion into the Italian language has had on your writing and your storytelling and your work as a novelist?
Well, it certainly changed things. It's forged new types of writing, new types of projects. I published a novel last year written in Italian. Mm-hmm. This year I translated it into English. Next year it will be published. I've written a book in verse in Italian. That is a completely new territory for me. I'd never written poetry in my life in English, but in Italian, I found my way into a different genre of writing. So these are pretty radical developments from, at least from my point of view. The Italian writing is producing fruit that I didn't know I was capable of bearing.
So when you say it changes things, that there is change, and then obviously there is the evolution of a writer as well. So in this bearing of fruit that you just mentioned, are you prouder of the work now? Do you feel that you have found a voice that is perhaps more authentic to you?
Honestly, I feel the exact same way at the end of every project that I've always felt, and that is a sense of gratitude, some sense of satisfaction that I reached an end, and but mostly the desire to use that endpoint as a new point of departure. And that's exactly how I feel. You know, I'm just looking at the page proofs of this book in verse that will come out in Italy in a few months, and it's already sort of behind me, right? And I'm already looking forward, looking ahead, looking past it, thinking, okay, now where can I go, having written this book that I needed to write? You know, I mean, I write the books that I need to write, and I think that's where the satisfaction comes in, because at least I can look back at each of the books in whatever language I've written them in and say to myself, I needed to write that book. And now I need to move on.
So because you have mentioned it a couple of times, I'm going to ask you the exact same question I just asked you, but instead insert teaching now of how that has changed you.
Well, I mean, I really feel that I'm a perpetual student, right? And that's how I feel most. That's how I approach that. I've approached my life. I've never stopped. I love that. It's what drives me. I love learning and relearning things. I love going back to, you know, I love going back and looking at my college paperback copy of A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man and looking at what I underlined all those years ago and underlining new things. I live for that, and I think, sure, you know, obviously the Italian adventure is really a big learning project, right? I mean, I just have to. It's there's so much that I have to learn and still learn, and then you forget, and then you have to learn it again, and so that's what I try to transmit. To the students, you know, I try to convey their good fortune at being able to spend all day, every day, at least for 4 years, perhaps more, thinking and reading and learning and exploring the world through ideas, through books, through professors who have perhaps gone, you know, who have a little more experience, a little more perspective on ideas, on texts, on subjects, on problems, and just in the ideal world, knowing that you know that never stops. It shouldn't ever stop. It shouldn't ever stop. And absolutely for a writer, it's vital. It's vital to keep learning and to keep studying and to keep looking at other writers and reading and we can't write without reading. If I stopped reading, I would stop writing. The whole thing would fall apart.
The new book is The Penguin Book of Italian Short Stories. It is edited by Giunta Lahiri. It is published by Penguin Classics. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org and can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program. Bookmark us for next week, and thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.